its approach to healing. Ayurveda's approach to healing is also fourfold, and based on the same approach in Yoga Sutra also we find the fourfold approach, and that is what Vyasa states. So Chikitsa Shastre Yatha Chaturvyuhaha Evam Atrapi Chaturvyuhaha. So in Chikitsa, the fourfold approach is Rogaha, disease, Roga Hetuho, cause for disease, Arogyam, the state of health, and then Bheshajam, which is the medicines which helps attain that state. In Yoga Shastra, the Chaturvyuha, the fourfold approach is focused on Heyam, Heya Hetu, Hanam, Hanopayaha. These are the four steps in achieving the goal of yoga. Heyam is that which is to be overcome. Heyam means dukkham, suffering. Heya Hetu refers to the cause of suffering. Cause of suffering is presented as the Sanyoga of the connection between Prakriti and Purusha, Drashta or Drishyam. Hanam is the cessation of the connection between Drashta and Drishyam, which is Kaivalyam. And Hanopayaha, the method to reach that Kaivalyam, Hanam, is Viveka Khyati, which will be presented in today's class. Viveka Khyati is Khyati knowledge, Vivekam, a discriminative knowledge, which means a clear knowledge between what is Prakriti and what is Purusha, what is matter and what is spirit or the Purusha. That clarity, a clear enlightenment about this is the tool, Hanopayaha. So this is the fourfold approach which we are discussing under the of yoga under the title Chaturvyuha. So we discussed about Drashtra Drishya Sanyoga as Heya Hetu, and then the terms Drashta and Drishyam was mentioned in this sutra. So Drishyam was taken and explained in detail, and the features of Drishyam as being made up of the three gunas, Prakasha, Kriya, Stiti, Shilam, and then Bhutendriyatmakam. So how does it manifest? Drishyam includes the senses and also the objects of senses, including the entire world outside. That is Drishyam. And then the purpose of existence of Drishyam is Bhoga Apavargartham, is for the enjoyment of the Purusha, in the sense being for the experience of the Purusha. And Drishyam also exists for the final enlightenment of the Purusha, to clearly understand what is Drishyam and what is Drashta. So for that also Drishyam exists. And the Guna Parvani, the various stages of manifestation of Gunas which come under Drishyam, or which are the basic building blocks of Drishyam, was also discussed. Vishesha, Avishesha, Lingamatra and Alinga. The four stages of Drishyam was mentioned under Guna Parva. So Alinga is the subtlest form of Drishyam, which is beyond perception, which is called as Pradhanam. So there are many terms to indicate this Pradhanam. One is Alingam, the other is Pradhanam, the other is Prakriti. All these terms indicate only the matter, the subtlest form of matter. And then Lingamatram is Mahat, the first manifestation from the Prakriti, which is said to be intelligent in nature. In mythology, this Mahat is called as Hiranyagarbha or the Chaturmukha Brahma or the four-faced creator. And even it is said that this Hiranyagarbha in Mahabharata, we find that it is this Hiranyagarbha who taught the yoga for the first time. Hiranyagarbho yogasya vakta nanyaha puratanaha. So that is what, this is the reference that we find from the Mahabharata. So this is Mahat, and then so from Alinga comes Linga, and then this Linga, from this Linga Matra we find Avisheshas. There are two kinds of Avisheshas. One is Asmita, the ego or the I principle, which emerges from Mahat, and this is Avishesha. This is still unmanifest, and the manifestation from this Asmita is the 11 Indriyas, which are called as Visheshas. So 11 Indriyas means 5 Karmendriyas, 5 Jnanendriyas, and 1 mind, that is Manas. So all these are the Visheshas or the manifestations. All these emerge from Asmita. And the second Avishesha is Tanmatra. So Tanmatras are the subtle form of the 5 elements, Pancha Mahabhutas. So the atoms, if one may say, that they are the atoms, the minutest particles. And when the atoms of Tanmatras join together, they manifest into the Panchamahabhutas. So that makes the world that we see. So the 4 stages, Alingam, Lingamatram, and then from that emerges Asmita. And from Asmita, the 11 senses emerge. Also from Asmita, we see the emergence of Tanmatra, which is still subtle. And from that Tanmatra, we see the emergence of the Pancha Mahabhutas, the 5 elements. Prithivi, Apaha, Tejaha, Vayuhu, Akasham. So these are the details about the subtle and perceivable gross aspects of Drishyam. Why so much detail about Drishyam? So the Purusha or the enlightened being, in his pursuit to attain enlightenment, he should not only be aware of the gross aspects of Drishyam, he should also be wary of the subtle workings of Drishyam. That is why in the first pada you see that Vairagyam is mentioned in 2 ways. One is Paravairagyam and the other is Aparavairagyam, which is that Aparavairagyam or lower Vairagyam or lower discrimination or lower detachment refers to detachment from the objects or the enjoyments or the sources of happiness of this world, and the enjoyments that one or the happiness that one proposes to attain in the other world, that is heaven or Swargaloka. So which are of course the grosser aspect of the sthula aspect of the Drishyam. But according to yoga, this is not enough, because at a subtle level the gunas will be working, and it is very difficult to overcome the association of the gunas because they are so subtle. So the second level of Vairagyam, that is Paravairagyam, is given there, which is Guna Vaitrishnyam, is being wary or being detached from the subtle workings of the gunas. So by introducing an aspirant, a sadhaka, to these divisions or subtle variations of Drishyam, Vishesha, Avishesha, Lingamatra and Alinga, the Sutrakara Patanjali wants to make the sadhaka aware that it is not enough if a sadhaka becomes or attains vairagya only at the level of the five elements and also the senses and also the body which house the senses. He should also be aware of the subtle workings of the three gunas. So that is why so much of a detail about the divisions of drishya is given here. And now, so along with drishyam, the term drashta was also used. Drashta means the seer or the silent spectator of all the workings of drishyam, who does not get involved, but he observes the workings of the drishyam. That is pure consciousness. Drashta drishi matraha shuddhaha api pratyaya anupashyaha. This was discussed in the previous class. Drishi matraha, he is in the pure form of consciousness and he does not change, and hence shuddhaha, but he is reflected, or his presence is reflected in buddhi. That is the Yoga Sutras philosophy. So last time we had a question on the reflection of Purusha on the buddhi. When Purusha is not material, how can he be reflected on the buddhi? I just went back and referred to the texts. So there, in the fourth chapter, we get a sutra, Sattva Purushayoho Shuddhi Samye Kaivalyam. So which means Kaivalya, the state of moksha or the final liberation is achieved when both the sattva refers to the sattva guna of the mind, and the purusha, the drashta, which is discussed here. When the purity of these two becomes almost equal, then what happens is kaivalyam or moksha is attained. The point here is that there is an element in drishyam called as sattva, which can or which possesses the capability to grasp the presence of the drashta, even though he is not material. So that is the subtle indication. So there is no clear communication in the Yoga Sutras as such, but this is one indirect indication in the Yoga Sutras from which we can understand that sattva, the guna sattva, has the capability to grasp the presence or to grasp the reflection of the Purusha. So, in the normal state of life, worldly activities, what happens is sattva still captures the reflection of the Purusha, but still, because of dominance of Rajas and Tamas, the clarity that it is a reflection alone of the Purusha is lost. But whereas, as one progresses in the path of yoga by practicing the various limbs of yoga like Yama, Niyama, till Dharana and Dhyana and Samadhi, what happens is the sattva is purified to a very great extent, that then it is understood that this is a mere reflection of Purusha. Until then, there is a lack of clarity about the nature of Purusha, and when the sattva becomes utmost pure, then it is the Purusha is reflected as he is without distortion. And the second one is, it is realized that it is only a reflection of Purusha which is happening on the drishyam part, specifically on sattva. So this is one explanation that we get by looking into the commentary. And of course, one work of Surendranath Das Gupta, he has written a lot of critical review of the Indian systems of philosophy. He has analyzed such subtle aspects. So from that, we see that this kind of an explanation has been attempted by the implications or the indications that are there in the Yoga Sutra. So though Purusha is not material, the Sattva Guna possesses the capacity to grasp his presence or take his awareness or absorb his awareness and present it as its own. So this is the explanation to the aspect on the question on Drashta. So now we move on to the next part of this of today's class. Now, so we saw Heyam as Dukkham, Heya Hetu as Drashtra Drishya Sanyoga. So the cause of Dukkham is the conjunction or the connection between Drishyam, which is of the nature of Alinga, Linga Matra, Vishesha and Avishesha, and Drashta, who is pure in the form of consciousness, but still is reflected in Sattva or Drishyam. So this conjunction is the cause of the Dukkham, the wrong identification of Drashta as Drishyam. Now, next sutra, it continues, the Chaturvyuha aspect still continues. What happens is, Tadartha Eva Drishyasya Atma. It further discusses, the next sutra, the 21st sutra, presents the purpose of existence of Drishya. Though it has been mentioned in the sutra, Bhogapavargartham Drishyam, the purpose of Drishya is for the experience of Purusha and also for the liberation of the Purusha. This sutra reiterates the fact that the Drishyam exists only for the purpose of Purusha, which also means that the Drishyam does not have a purpose on its own because it is Jada, insentient. It is Drashta who is conscious, for whose purpose the Drishyam exists. So, and this also further emphasizes the nature of Drishyam, it is to serve the purpose of Drashta, and it does not live or exist for itself. Yes. So this is Tadartha Eva Drishyasya Atma. And then the next sutra also presents the nature of Drishyam. Though the Drishyam exists for Purusha, what happens when the Purusha or the consciousness or that individual soul attains liberation? So what happens is, Kritartham Prati Nashtam Api Anashtam. There is the connection between Drashta and Drishyam, by which all the worldly experiences, Dukkham and all such things happen. So when by the final realization, the Drashta understands the nature of Drishyam and clearly the clear idea that Drishyam is matter and is not connected with Drashta that appears, then what happens is the Drishyam is lost or the drishyam vanishes for that particular drashta, but it exists for other purushas, for other jivatmas who are still under the spell of ignorance. For them the drishyam exists. The purusha is the one who attains kaivalyam, and he gets freed from the clutches of the drishyam, but the drishyam continues to exist. So we see that there are two stages of drashta. So one state of being connected with drishyam, the other state of being freed from drishyam. So bandha and kaivalya or moksha. But whereas drishyam always exists, though drishyam might not exist from the point of view of the purusha or that consciousness or that individual soul who has attained liberation, it exists for the other souls which are bound. The Vedanta, especially in Advaita Vedanta, says drishya itself or the maya, the term maya which is used, which is a further refinement, it is further built up on the concept of drishyam, that is the maya, is just a wrong perception. So it does not exist materially. It's just a wrong perception. Whereas here in the yoga system of philosophy, drishyam has a clear material existence. Whereas from the point of view of Advaita Vedanta, drishya essentially does not exist. It is only an appearance, mithya. So that this also makes clear about the yoga standpoint on the nature of the world and the nature of the soul. So the souls get liberated, or souls get freed from the wrong perception created by the existence of the drishyam, whereas the matter continues to exist as it is without change. So that point, that philosophical point, is clarified in this point, in this sutra. Kritartham prati nashtam api anashtam. For a liberated soul, drishyam does not exist, prakriti does not exist. Does it mean that it has totally vanished? It is not so. For those who are bound, for those jivatmas who are bound, it is anashtam. It is still there. It exists. So that is the meaning of the sutra 22. And now to the 23rd sutra, which is on the definition, which is the definition of the term Sanyoga. So far we have seen the description of drashta. We have seen the description of drishyam. Now the term Sanyoga, drashtra drishya sanyoga. So drashtra drishya sanyoga was presented as heya hetu, cause of dukkham. So now this term Sanyoga is explained in the 23rd sutra. Sanyoga here is sva swami shaktyoho swarupa upalabdhi hetuhu sanyoga. So sanyoga is the conjunction or connection. Connection between whom? Connection between drashta and drishyam, purusha and prakriti, the consciousness and the matter, or the soul and the mind. So this sanyoga, what is this sanyoga? Swarupa upalabdhi hetuhu sanyoga. this Sanyoga is defined by the purpose for which the Sanyoga exists. The purpose of Sanyoga is Swarupa Upalabdhi. Upalabdhi is attainment or understanding. Understanding of what? Swarupa. Understanding of the nature. So, or the original form, Swarupa. So, the very purpose of this Sanyoga is to understand the nature. To understand the nature of what? To understand the nature of Swa Shakti and Swami Shakti. So, two terms are again used here. So, the Sanyoga or the conjunction between Prakriti and Purusha is to understand the nature of what? Swashakti. Swashakti refers to the Chaitanya Shakti, the nature of the consciousness. Swa refers to the nature of Drishyam. And Swami refers to the nature of the consciousness. So, the Sanyoga exists for understanding or clearly grasping the nature of Swa Shakti, that is the nature of Prakriti, and also the nature of the Swami, that is the Purusha. Swami and Swa are the new two terms which are used here to indicate Prakriti Purusha. So, many pairs of terms have been used in this in the yoga literature to indicate the matter and spirit, the Atma and Anatma. One term that we saw was Drashta and Drishyam. The other term was Purusha and Prakriti. Here the term is Swa and Swami are used, or rather Swashakti and Swami Shakti. Swashakti refers to the potential of Drishyam. Shakti is potential. So, the potential of Drishyam, and also Swami Shakti is the potential of Drashta. So, Swa also means possession. And Swami is the one who controls that possession, who owns that particular thing. So, it is clearly by the terms of Swa and Swami, Swa refers to the possession and Swami refers to the possessor, the one who has the control over the possession. So, what kind of a control does he have? Either to get identified with the possession and its modifications, or to withdraw himself or to renounce that possession. Even normally we see that a person who owns something, for example, he owns a anything that we see. He owns a cell phone. he is the Swami, and the phone or the telephone or the mobile phone is his possession. So, a Swami can decide whether or not to continue owning that particular object. So, he may renounce, no, henceforth, I will not use cell phone. I will only write postcards. So, he has decided to overcome or renounce that possession, or he may also decide to own it and use it, to have it and use it. So, the word Swami indicates the independence of Drashta, whereas the telephone or the cell phone does not have a choice. It is Jada. And it will not make any difference to the Drishyam or the object. So it is only the drashta who is independent and who can take a decision as to whether to identify himself with the possession or to withdraw his connection. So that is the purpose that is decided by this sanyoga. Unless the sanyoga exists, the nature of these two are not known. So one more thing is, this sanyoga or the conjunction between the prakriti and purusha can either end in the realization of the purusha or understanding the nature of the prakriti. So I will not say the realization of the prakriti, because the prakriti is different from the purusha. So the entire setup of the prakriti will be understood, upalabdhi. So the understanding of the swarupa or the nature of drishyam happens only through sanyoga. And also the understanding of the nature of the purusha, which is pure consciousness, also happens only when in contrast to the drishyam. So that contrast is also possible only when the connection between prakriti and purusha exists. So that this is defined as the role of sanyoga. The sanyoga is heya hetu, is the cause of dukkham, but this sanyoga has to be overcome. But the point emphasized in this sutra is, it is only through this sanyoga that the nature of the purusha is also understood. So hence for an aspirant, this sanyoga leads to self-realization, whereas for a person who is immersed in worldly activities, this sanyoga refers to further involvement, deepening the involvement with the worldly activities. So that point is brought out in the sutra, 23rd sutra of the second pada, which explains the nature of the connection or the purpose of the connection between drashta and drishyam, purusha and prakriti, swami and swa. So now the next sutra, sanyoga hetu, the cause of this conjunction. The cause of this conjunction, what is the cause of this conjunction? Prakriti and purusha exist, and what is that which leads to the cause of the connection between prakriti and purusha? That is presented in the 24th sutra of the second pada. Tasya hetuhu avidya. The cause of the connection between prakriti and purusha is avidya, ignorance, wrong knowledge. Now, one thing has to be stated, that it is to be clearly understood that since time immemorial, according to the yoga literature, the prakriti and purusha are always connected. There was no period in the remotest past where prakriti and purusha were not connected with each other. Now this, then where is the possibility of prakriti purusha remaining separate, and then by avidya they too get connected? So how does this fit in? When consulting the commentaries, we understand that this sanyoga refers to the connection between prakriti and purusha re-emerging at the end of the previous, in the beginning of the new creation. I have to explain this, which means the process of creation and devolution, evolution and devolution, or emergence and merger, srishti and pralaya, that is cyclical in yoga Vedanta systems of philosophy. So how long is this cycle of creation and the merger of the creation into its cause, is it going on? As this is a cycle, no, or a circle, it is unending, or unending one thing, and it is without a beginning also. As in the circle, we cannot pinpoint the starting point. Similarly, according to the philosophy of yoga, the connection between Prakriti and Purusha existed since time immemorial. But what happens is, at the end of one srishti, at the end of one creation, the pralaya happens or the merger happens. So before the re-emergence, during the pralaya, the connection between Prakriti and Purusha remains suspended. But it is only suspended and it has not become non-existent. It is only suspended. Now, how is that suspension revoked in the next creation? That suspension is revoked by avidya. The connection between the Prakriti and Purusha re-emerges by avidya, which is wrong knowledge, which is in the form of seed. So this is the explanation to this sutra, Sanyoga Hetu. So what causes the connection between Prakriti and Purusha? So during the previous pralaya, at the end of the pralaya, what happens is the Purusha and Prakriti's connection is suspended, and the suspension goes off, or the connection re-emerges because of this avidya, sanyoga hetuhu avidya. Now again, another explanation can also be given to this particular sutra, that since time immemorial, Prakriti and Purusha are connected with each other. What is that which connects the Prakriti and Purusha? So if two are connected with each other, there should be some connecting agent. When one paper and the other paper stick together, then normally, this is just a small example. So we see an adhesive or a gum, so which connects these two. So what is the connecting agent which links both Prakriti and Purusha? The connecting agent is avidya, ignorance or wrong knowledge. So the purpose of presenting avidya as the agent that connects both Prakriti and Purusha is to turn the attention of the sadhaka towards avidya, and he should be made aware of the existence of avidya, and he is made aware so that he puts in effort to overcome this avidya. So the drashta was presented, drishyam was presented, the conjunction between drashta and drishyam was presented, that which connects the drashta and drishyam, that is presented as avidya. And it was also stated that to attain freedom from dukkha, to get absolute freedom from dukkha, this sanyoga has to be overcome. This connection should be overcome. The connection between Prakriti and Purusha should be overcome. So where should one work, or what should be his focus to overcoming this connection? So this sutra brings to the focus avidya. So to overcome the connection, so one has to overcome the connecting agent, that is avidya. So the cause of the connection is avidya, and one should overcome avidya to disengage Prakriti and Purusha, and only then Purusha will exist in his pure nature. So that is presented in the 24th sutra. And that which was implied by 24th sutra is stated verbally in the 25th sutra, which says tad abhavat sanyoga abhavaha hanam tat drishehe kaivalyam. So what it says is tad abhavaha, the cause of connection between prakriti and purusha is avidya, that is wrong knowledge. Tad abhavat, by the absence of avidya, when avidya becomes non-existent, then what happens is naturally the connection between prakriti and purusha also ceases. Sanyoga abhavaha, this cessation of the connection between prakriti and purusha is called as hanam. Hanam is, as we saw earlier, it is the state of freedom from dukkha. So hanam, to be compared to the medical term of Ayurveda, it is arogyam. So we saw the fourfold medical division approach of the Ayurveda Shastra, where rogaha roga hetuhu arogyam bheshajam. So this hanam, or hanam refers to the state of in Ayurveda parlance, it is the freedom from disease. So the freedom from disease of worldly existence is achieved by overcoming the avidya. So that is hanam, and that is the state when drishehe kaivalyam, when the drashta, or the which is also mentioned by the term drishi, pure consciousness, attains isolation, kaivalyam. It gets, so when there is no conjunction with drishyam, what happens is the drashta is now isolated. In the sense, he is now alone, he is now pure, he exists in his true nature without having the connection which causes a distorted image of himself. So that leads to the moksha or kaivalya. And the next sutra presents the it moves into the realm of the, so far the philosophy aspect or the theoretical aspect of liberation was mentioned. Now, so the fourth unit clearly lays down the philosophical framework or the goal to be achieved. It gives a clarity as to what is matter, what is spirit, what are the subdivisions or the subtle, what are the gross and subtle forms of the drishyam, and the purpose of existence of drishyam, and the connection between drashta and drishyam, the cause of connection, how and the theoretical way in which the connection is to be overcome, everything was presented. Now from the fifth unit, it is all the practical steps one can take towards achieving that disconnection, or to overcome the connection between prakriti and purusha. So the fifth unit says that hanopayaha, hanam refers to kaivalyam or moksha, upayaha, so what is the method, what is the tool that helps in overcoming this avidya. So as we saw, the tool or the basic approach of a sadhaka or a practitioner should be to overcome avidya. So one cannot directly deal with the connection between drashta and drishyam, because it is too subtle. So to grasp it itself is difficult. The existence of prakriti and purusha itself will not be very clearly understood at the initial stages. So it was said that try to understand what is your ignorance. So ignorance was initially discussed in the second pada itself. Ignorance and its manifestations as kleshas, avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha. Avidya being the ground in which the crops like asmita, ego, raga, passion or attachment, dvesha, hatred or anger and other such aspects, and abhinivesha, clinging to life or fear of life, all these grow. So the essential idea is one has to target these, the five kleshas beginning from avidya. Avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha and abhinivesha. If one is capable of overcoming these, or one is capable of initially managing these efficiently and then capable of overcoming these, so this is the step which will give a grip towards attaining the disconnection between prakriti and purusha. So though the goal is prakriti purusha viyoga or kaivalya, but the place one starts working is at the level of kleshas. So one should work to overcome the kleshas, the root of which is avidya, and then gradually this liberation or the disjunction between the prakriti and purusha happens. And towards that end, what is the antidote? What is the if we take avidya as the bacteria which is causing, or the microorganism or the virus which is causing problem in this body, then what is that antidote which will neutralize that avidya? So that avidya is present, the antidote is presented in the 26th sutra, which is viveka khyatihi. Viveka khyatihi aviplava hanopayah. Viveka khyati. Viveka khyati. Khyati is knowledge. Clear knowledge. Clear knowledge of what? Viveka. The difference between prakriti and purusha. So the difference between, or the clear, the variation between prakriti and purusha. The clear knowledge that prakriti is different and purusha is different. That is viveka, and khyati is very clear knowledge, very clear realization of the nature of prakriti and purusha is viveka khyati. And this viveka khyati should be aviplava. Aviplava in the sense it should not be intermittent, a continuous, it should be continuous. So if it is intermittent, the problem is again the kleshas like raga, dvesha in the hole or in the gaps of viveka khyati, these kleshas may spring up and then distort the understanding. So the goal or the powerful antidote to overcome avidya is attainment of viveka khyati, clear knowledge about the nature of prakriti and purusha. And even this viveka khyati itself becomes a goal. In a sense, this viveka khyati is a clear understanding which will not be very clear, or which will not be which will not be very efficient if the kleshas exist. The viveka khyati is not theoretical in nature. It is a clear realization. So that clear realization, if it is mixed up with all the kleshas, then it will not overcome that avidya. So even in towards the attainment of viveka khyati, the kleshas are to be controlled and have to be suspended, and they have to be made subtler and dismissed. So only when we work on kleshas and reduce them, this viveka khyati will become stronger and will root out the avidya at its most subtlest form also. So the steps are very clear now. So viveka khyati overcomes avidya, and the non-existence of avidya means it leads to the disjunction between the connection between prakriti and purusha. And this viveka khyati also should be aviplava. Aviplava means it should be constant in nature. So without distraction, this flow of clarity about the difference between and prakriti and purusha should exist. See, even now as we are listening to these classes, we theoretically understand the concept that prakriti and purusha are different, but so only by further sadhana or deepening of the understanding of this, so we do have the viveka now. Oh, we understand that prakriti and purusha are different, but it is very very theoretical and very very superficial now. As we deepen our understanding based on our practice to reduce the kleshas, the fact of the matter will become more and more clear. Prakriti and purusha being different, rather than being very theoretical, it will become a vijnana. Now it is at the state of jnana or mere theoretical knowledge, but as we work on the kleshas to reduce them, what happens is that that which was theoretically known becomes clearly realized at a later stage. So that becomes the real viveka khyati. That viveka khyati roots out avidya, and by rooting out avidya, the sanyoga between prakriti and purusha is also overcome. Now the next sutra, and just introduce the next sutra and stop, because that again takes a longer explanation. The 27th sutra, which is just before the commencement of Ashtanga Yoga. See, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras are famous for the Ashtanga Yoga discussion that it has, the practical limbs of yoga practice, and this is the sutra which is just before that Ashtanga Yoga, the 27th sutra. From 28th sutra commences Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama discussion on that, which is very interesting, very practical, and very useful to everyone. And the theoretical aspect of the discussion ends with the 27th sutra, where now if one attains this viveka khyati, the 26th sutra spoke about the viveka khyati, attainment of a clear discrimination of prakriti from purusha. When such a clear knowledge exists, it is not yet, person has not yet overcome the avidya, but he has attained that clear knowledge of the distinction between prakriti and purusha, then he becomes a jivan mukta. So what will be in his mind? So what are all the experiences of a jivan mukta? That the next sutra, that is the 27th sutra, gives us the insider view into the mind of the working to the mind of the jivan mukta. So what are all the experiences that a jivan mukta will be having? on attainment of that viveka khyati, that is of the separate or the clear knowledge about the distinction between prakriti and purusha. So that is a very beautiful sutra as to how gradually a practitioner becomes a realized soul. So the transition of a practitioner becoming a realized soul, that is wonderfully presented in the 27th sutra, which we will take up in the next class. So there are a few questions. I'll just look into those. So, is Prakriti and Pradhana identical? Yes, Prakriti and Pradhana are identical, one and the same. There are, as I said, the Yoga Sutra mentions various terms to indicate the various roles. Though the object is one and the same, the various terms etymologically signifies the various aspects of the same Prakriti. See, Prakriti, again this beautiful meaning, Prakriti is the cause. So it is that we see the Prakriti and Vikriti. Prakriti and Vikriti are used in connection with each other. So the term Prakriti indicates that that Prakriti is the cause from which all the Vikritis happen. And now the Pradhana. Actually, the Tattva Vaisharadi commentary presents the etymology of the term Pradhana, which is Prakarshena Adhiyate Asmin Iti. So, that into which everything merges back into is Pradhana. So, Prakriti is the term which is used in connection with the emergence, the Srishti. And Pradhana refers to the same Prakriti into which, or to the state which everything goes back into. So, it is the same primordial cause from which everything emerges and into which everything goes back. So, these two aspects are explained by the two terms, Prakriti and Pradhana. There is Prakarana Grantha Drik Drishya Viveka. Is Drik same as Drashta of Yoga? Yes, even in the Yoga Sutra itself, we see the usage of the term Drik. So, Yoga Sutra uses the term Drashta and also uses the term Drishi or Drik, Drik Shakti. Just now we saw the Sutra on the 23rd Sutra, Drik Shakti and Drishya Shakti. It is the same, Drashta, but the idea of Jivatma, see, Drik Drishya Viveka is a Vedanta text. And Patanjali Yoga Sutra presents the yogic point of view. So, the yogic view of Drashta is different from the Vedantic view of Drashta. The major division or major difference between the Drashta of Yoga and the Drashta of Vedanta is, as I understand, is there are multiple drashtas in Yoga Sutras or in the school of yoga. The individual souls are numerous or many in number, whereas according to the Advaita Vedanta, it is the same Paramatma which wrongly appears as, due to erroneous or avidya or maya, it appears as Jivatma. So, the appearance, the drashta appears only to be as Jivatma, but essentially it is the same Paramatma. Whereas, the individuality of the Jivatma is true in yoga. So, one by one the Jivatmas attain moksha. So, that the Purushas are many in yoga, whereas the Purusha is one which appears as both Jiva and the Purusha or Ishvara in the Vedanta. So the term is same, but the connotations or the meanings or subtle differences exist. And then, yes, again, if Prakriti is all Jadam, that is inert, how is it Mahat, which is an intelligent principle, comes out of Prakriti? The point is that in the presence of the Purusha, again, the philosophical, the understanding of the Yoga Sutra is that in the presence of the Purusha, the Prakriti's emergence happens. That is, as in the presence of a magnet, the iron filings get attracted. Similarly, the example should not be totally compared with Prakriti and Purusha. It is just for the sake of example. By in the mere presence of the Purusha, the evolution starts happening in the Prakriti. Right? The intelligence of Mahat is also derived from the Purusha alone. So, as you rightly said, the Mahat is also Jadam, but it is a refined Jadam than Prakriti. So, that refinement happens due to the proximity of Purusha, and the intelligence of the Mahat is also due to the reflection of Purusha only. So, this is the idea on the evolution. And so there are questions from Mr. Paul. So as we have exceeded the time, we can fix up, or you can send me emails. I can reply through the email, or in the next class in the beginning, or if you can send me the questions, I will give the reply in the beginning of the next class. So I'm just giving you my email ID. So I have sent my email ID. So can you, if you can just I'm just unmuting you, Paul Mahodaya, so that you can speak. Just a moment.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Please.
So just the Vedanta and the yoga thing, which constantly I hear this, and I have my own kind of like thinking about it, and then so it becomes kind of an issue, because we discussed it today a little bit, and certainly, of course, we'll, you know, I'll just put out the question and then you'll talk about it next week. But the idea is that the Prakriti in Vedanta is not real, basically. And then in Yoga, it's considered real. And now that's supposed to be a difference. And yet I'm not really set on that as being a difference yet, because in Vedanta, they say that the Prakriti is not real, but it is real in its own reality. It has its own reality, but it's not really real. It just has its own reality. And inside that reality, everything is real.
Okay.
So then I don't see how that's really different necessarily as a complete difference from yoga, where yoga's not really saying that much different in the sense, especially when we look at Pratinashtam, where it actually disappears for the for the one who has understood.
True.
So there, it seems like they're very parallel, and it's really hard to say, well, that's really opposite or different from what, you know, one is from the other. It just seems like Vedanta's defined it more.
Yeah. So, See, one thing is, one immediate answer that I get is that essentially all these systems are astika in nature. Astika in the sense that those that have their source as the Upanishads. And hence, it is based on the same Upanishadic sentences that the different strands of thoughts have emerged. So apparently, we see a difference, but essentially, as you mentioned, they point to the same thing, and hence the apparent differences can be dissolved by referring back to the Upanishadic source. So I will try to discuss more on this in the next class. Thank you. And yeah,
even in the sense that the Prakriti has no beginning and the relationship has no beginning. I mean, that's just, it's really the same in both of them.
Yeah, very true. So, yes, one small announcement here at the end of this class is that again, next Saturday, I'm out of town for a lecture. So, I don't want to miss the class. I propose to prepone the class to Friday morning at 6 a.m. So, I request you to kindly take note of this and participate in the class at 6 a.m. next Friday. Of course, you will get a email notification in this regard. And I thank you for all the cooperation. We'll end with the Mangala Shloka. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Dhanyavadah.